Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to VUX World. I'm your host, Kane Sims, and as always, we've got an epic guest lined up for you today. We're speaking to Ofer Ronin, who is he's ex-Google founder and CEO now of Tomato AI. We're going to be talking voice cloning, we're going to be talking voice filtering, we're going to be talking about accent softening. Did you believe that's a thing? There's a technology, Tomato AI, that will take one stream of audio, your speech like my accent, and soften it into another accent. The use cases and value of that is amazing. We're going to speak to Ofer in just a moment. But first, I've got to tell you about Unpass, the Unpass conference, the conversational AI conference of the decade, where we are going to bring together 400 practitioners, conversation designers, developers, product owners, you name it. Everyone who's responsible for the practical implementation of conversational AI is going to be there, and we're going to be sharing lessons learned, best practice, case studies, a whole bunch of interesting insights around how to design effective conversations, how to deploy effective conversational user interfaces, from large language models and generative AI to traditional natural language understanding interfaces, from product to customer service to customer experience, marketing, sales, all kinds of different use cases, verticals and industry. We've got booking.com, we've got Lloyds Banking Group, we've got Hugging Face, Samsung, you know, Just Answer, you name it, and they will be there. The top brands, the top influencers in this space, the top authors of this space, the top practitioners in this space, the top researchers in this space will all be at Unpars, and you can get your tickets right now at unparsedconf.com, June 17th to 19th in London, Londinium. All right. Now then, let's get on with the show, shall we? I would like to welcome my guest for today, Ofer Ronin, who is the CEO and co-founder of Tomato AI. Ofer, welcome to VUX World. Thank you for joining me.
Hello. Yeah, great to be here, Kane. Thanks for inviting me. So excited to chat today. You're quite the expert in contact centers, and excited to like get into it with you.
Likewise. I don't know why you call me an expert. You are the guy who has been working at Google for a long time. You were kind of part and of some of the big deployments over there, Verizon and all that kind of stuff. And you've got, you know, more experience than most. So I appreciate you spending time with us.
Yeah, excited to be here.
Nice one. So maybe we start there. Maybe we can, for a bit of context, share a little bit with everyone around your background and, you know, what you do, what you've done, and what brought you here, basically.
Sounds great. Yeah. So I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. I've sold 3 startups. 2 of them happened to be to Google and 1 to Ask.com. And when I was at Google, I was in their incubator called Area 120. And there I started a project that was then called Chatbase, which eventually became Contact Center AI at Google. And it started with doing analytics for chatbots. That's where we started. And later we added also the ability to build virtual agents using data at scale. So we'd take millions of conversations between humans to model more robust voice and chat virtual agents. That ended up going really well, and we ended up doing over $500 million in contact center AI deals, and Verizon was the first big one that we did, massive contact center operation with tens of thousands of agents and tens of millions of calls a year. Very exciting to do that. I later did other contact center work at Google, Agent Assist, and other things like that, and then left to start Tomato AI, which is also in the contact center space. This time, it's in the voice AI realm, and we'll, I'm sure, talk plenty about that category and the benefits for call centers there.
Mm. Yeah. So did I understand that right then? So the first startup that you created was the technology that ended up being part of Google's CCAI product. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, CCAI had a lot of different parts to it. You could say it started with Google buying Dialogflow, which was earlier called API.ai. And that was for bot building. And my first project was to create the analytics for Dialogflow. We would do analytics for over 1 million bots. And then it evolved from there to helping build virtual agents in a robust way. We ended up influencing Dialogflow and eventually merging together once we exited from the internal incubator into Google Cloud, where it all came together. But we drove very large deals for Google in the contact center space by having this like very methodical approach to finding intents, training phrases, and all those things that you do to build virtual agents. Now, things have evolved. This is going back 3-4 years. By now, we have large LLM models, and we can get into that as well, which have in many ways changed the approach.
We've lost your audio there, Ofer. Looks like there's been a disconnect on the audio. Unless it's mine.
Just switch to using my laptop.
Hold on. Okay. Yeah, I think it's mine. Hold on a second. I think my speaker. Oh, no, my speaker should be the same. Yeah, try that again.
Okay, 1, 2, 3,
yeah.
4.
Good. Yeah, we're back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
sorry. Go on. Carry on.
So I was just saying that there's been an evolution in how virtual agents are being built. Obviously, we're in the middle of it, but it's that evolution from intent-based NLU models towards either supplementing or replacing with large language models. And we can get into that as well, like that evolution.
Yeah, definitely. So that would be Insights then, was it, the product that you were working on that would then become part of CCAI? Dialogflow, which was API.ai, Google acquired it, and then they kind of rolled together that with, they have an insights capability, which is the analytics side, and then both of those together presumably rolled up into the agent assist capability.
So, you know, Insights was something my co-founder and CTO and Tomato AI led the engineering efforts for, and that was for call centers to get insights into their human conversations, agent conversations. The work I did became known as advanced agent modeling, and it was the premium kind of solution from Google that was done for like Fortune 500 companies.
Right. Okay. I'm with you. We'll definitely get into some of those lessons learned, because I think you've got loads of lessons learned from working at those large deployments. And I'm sure that a lot of people that are tuning in will be familiar with the Verizon use case, because that was a flagship client for Google, you know, a little while back. And I think it might have even been the first company to use Agent Assist, was it, Verizon?
So Verizon was a flagship company, and then after that we got other deals done, like AT&T and other ones, but they definitely came in early.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, we'll definitely get into that, but I think I'll be definitely curious to learn a bit more about, you say tomato, I say tomato. Tomato AI. Tomato AI. The voice, you call it voice filtering. People might view it as voice cloning, probably the wrong term. I think you don't particularly, not as fond of that term, but the whole kind of voice manipulation is something that is very kind of hot right now. You know, you've got 11 labs with that. You've got Resemble AI, which has been doing it for quite a while, but doing some interesting stuff lately. OpenAI has been putting a lot of effort around the research and development around synthetic voices and things like that. But what Tomato AI is doing is slightly different. Want to tell us a little bit about like what it is that you're actually doing?
First of all, if we step back, voice filtering is a wide area that covers different use cases, and you could play around with what voice is heard. Is it your own or someone else's? But also under the voice filtering umbrella, you can play around with what accent is heard. You can soften the accent to make it not as heavy, or more what the customer is expecting to hear, like the way they're expecting words to be pronounced. So let's say more Americanized, or you know, made more British, whatever is most comfortable for the listener. And it helps get through sales and support calls, and this could be used in meetings as well. The companies you mentioned are largely focused on offline use cases, and those are for creators primarily, meaning you take an initial soundbite or recording and in an offline fashion, change it in some way, maybe make the voice different. And that's the most common. That's like what 11 Labs helps you do. The use case Tomato AI is going after, the real-time use case, has its own challenges in the sense that no longer can you count on a great mic like I'm using or a soundproof room these are real world environments, are noisy and low end kind of setups, cheap PCs, headphones, and so on. And so the input you're getting is very poor. And you're trying to, in real time, sub-second kind of time, enhance the voice in some way. And you can enhance the voice, adjust the accent. Those are two orthogonal dimensions you can play with. You can do one or both. The result is you improve trust and comprehension. So those two dimensions matter when it comes to sales, support, and even meetings.
Mm. So the first, so the second thing you mentioned there was accents. The first thing was changing the voice in some way. And what would be an example of changing a voice in real time?
Yeah.
Do you mean the sound of the voice to make it sound like someone else?
Yeah, that's right. So it's actually pretty cool to play with. Like we have examples where we have like a female agent speaking to us and we make her sound like a male with a deep voice.
Right.
Now that could end up resulting in better ROI, let's say for sales calls, or the flip side, you know, making a man sound like a woman. Yeah, that's a bit drastic maybe, but you can also make him sound like any voice actor that maybe has a pleasant voice that helps you get through a call better. Get better CSAT, maybe keep the person longer on the call, which is sometimes the need for sales calls to go well. So that's the voice aspect. Separate from that, is the accent. You can make someone that has a thick, I guess in your part of the world, like thick Scottish accent that might be challenging for the listener, Americanizing it a bit just to be able to follow better what's being said.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, definitely you might have some bother with the Scottish accent or the Geordie accent. My accent's quite strong anyway. The Liverpudlian accent maybe could do with a bit of treatment. The Birmingham accent perhaps as well. I think basically, unless you're from London or the outskirts, most British accents could probably benefit from some of that stuff, especially when talking with American people. Every time I say my name's Kane, everyone thinks I'm saying Ken, as in Barbie and Ken. Every time I say house, people think I'm saying mouse. And so, yeah, definitely maybe I could do with some of that. So I'm understanding this correctly, aren't I, that you will, in real time, change, let's say, my accent to an American accent.
That's right. And you know, we want to make it as organic as possible. If you're not noticing that it's happening, that's like the sweet spot you want to be in. And so our solution, we call it softening, because it doesn't completely remove your original accent. It just reduces the level of accent and makes it a bit more Americanized. Similarly, we have a feature to keep your voice. It's what's called a zero-shot model. There's no pre-training needed. It just works out the box, meaning any new voice heard, we can keep their voice and reduce their accent at the same time. And we think that combination is powerful for like having lengthy conversations that feel organic and are not, feeling in some way odd, which can happen. Like if you completely Americanize the accent and let's say someone has bad grammar, it just seems a bit odd.
Yeah. I'm going to try and do something here, if people can bear with me, because I've just noticed that on your website, you have a little example. So I'm going to try, if I can, turn on, where's my feedback for Google Chrome? Here we go. I'm going to turn on this Google Chrome thing here.
Yeah. And while you're doing that, I'll say that a key part of this working well is also to remove background noises. And we've created an AI-based denoiser that is good at removing other speakers sitting around you, which is the call center kind of issue that they have with noise. Like you hear the guy sitting next to you in the background. So we have like a special denoiser that removes those other voices.
Okay. Let me just see if this works then. We've got an original file here. I'm hoping the sound works. Let me just test it. One sec.
I am going to connect you to the
live. Right. Okay. Let me just change where the output of that's going to go to. So we've got one which is going to go to here. Let's send that to there. Right, let's try that one more time. Am I using Chrome there? Is that, oh, that's not Chrome, it's Safari. All right, let's try that again. Right, let me just test this.
license agent, which is in.
Yeah, we do. Okay, I'm gonna refresh this page. All right, so we should be able to hear this now. Let me just play this. This is the original clip. I don't know if you're gonna be able to hear it over, but let's.
That's fine.
Let's have a look.
I am going to connect you to the license agent, which is in North Carolina right now. Okay.
Right, that's the original. Could you hear that or not?
No, but yeah, go
okay,
ahead.
Okay, all right. So this is the enhanced.
Folks can hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the enhanced.
I am going to connect you to the license agent, which is in North Carolina right now. Okay.
All right. Let's play the original again.
I am going to connect you to the license agent, which is in North Carolina right now. Okay.
Enhanced.
I am going to connect you to the license
agent.
Yeah,
if you want a good one,
North
go down
Carolina
to the
right now, okay?
Maybe Haitian.
Haitian, which one's that? There's another four underneath it. Which one is that one?
Yeah, the third one down is like a French accent, and I like that one.
All right, let's try that. Let's try that. All right.
Okay, wonderful. And as I told you, they will increase your Medicare benefits, like provide you more dental.
Right, okay, now here's the enhanced.
Okay, wonderful. And as I told you, they will increase your Medicare benefits, like it provide you more dental.
Interesting. If I was you, I'm not being overly critical, but I would move that one to the top of the page. Because that is really good. That is really good. Yeah, the first one sounds really good. And to do that work with that accent is definitely impressive. It sounds a little bit more grainy, whereas the second example sounds, you can kind of tell that there's something going on, but it's definitely a lot clearer. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah, the way I think about this is it's a matter of like, are your metrics getting better with the voice filter on or off? Mm. And even if it's not perfect, the reality of voice is that it's done, many packets are dropped and it's grainy at times, and the quality can change over any normal conversation. And so we're not going for perfect, over time we'll get better and better, but we're going for better than baseline. Like we're looking to improve your metrics. So if you're doing sales, are you getting more revenue? Are you keeping people on the call more, getting them to trust you more and understand you better? If you're doing support, are you resolving more tickets faster with better CSAT? So those are the metrics we care about. And as this technology gets better and better, that can only go up and up.
Mm, definitely. And the reality is that, for certain parts of the world, the trend of outsourcing those calls, I don't think it's going to cease anytime particularly soon, but it is it is genuinely a barrier sometimes when you have someone that does have a really thick accent, and it's not like there's nothing you can do about it really. They're obviously trying, but it's a different part of the world, totally different accent, and it can be quite a challenge. So I totally get that the value of this. What is the, in terms of, you mentioned there that improving the metrics, what stage is the company at now? Is this working in, have you got some live use cases right now, and do you have any data to kind of, back up, I suppose, or to validate that these improvements can be made?
Yeah, so, just because denoising has been around for a while, there's pretty well-established data that you can improve metrics by 10%, many metrics by 10% ballpark, with denoising, and we're doing denoising and more, improving the voice quality, making it easier for the listener to follow and trust. And so we expect the lift to be between 10 and 20%. We're doing pilots and we're getting into it. As soon as we have case studies to share, I'm happy to reach back out. But yeah, the technology is hard to build. We're just now getting it to a level where we can do these pilots. We have some of the largest offshore and call centers leaning into pilots. They know that this can help them on two fronts. One is the metrics that we talked about, and keeping the metrics high helps them keep the business because they're judged by it. If CSAT drops too much, if handle time is too long, if callbacks are too much, if onshore transfer requests are too high, they can lose the account. And so they're motivated on that front. The other big piece is hiring. So they have a hard time finding enough talent in market, let's say India, Philippines, Pakistan, to hire. And this makes the hiring pool much bigger. More people that are capable now become available to hire because their voice now becomes acceptable and even more than that.
Mm. I can imagine that that would be a really useful addition for BPOs because they can use that as a value add for their clients. And, you know, I never really thought about going through the BPOs, actually. I always thought it would be a contact center in the UK or US or whatever that would try and use it directly. Or maybe they would go to their BPO provider and be like, hey, use this.
Yeah.
But yeah, going direct to BPOs is a good idea. Have you found that it is... Like when you create this, do you have to tune this specifically for a certain accent type? Or is it kind of the model is out of the box, it should work with most accents?
Yeah, so the way it works, it's a many to one model. We have a model for the American output accent, and then the input are many different accents. Now we are focusing on the largest markets for offshoring initially, so India and Pakistan, India and Philippines, but also Pakistan. Those are markets where there's like 2.5 million agents out of the 15 million total, a significant amount of concentration. And so we're optimizing for those, but the AI can generalize pretty well and ends up working for some other accents as well. But it's not as much a focus area yet, but it will be.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Have you noticed that from the work that you've done, any particular accents that are harder to kind of pull off than others from a technical perspective?
Yeah, so I would say Indian accents are a little more challenging than Filipino. They're a little heavier and more diverse. There's many parts of India that have differing accents. And so, yeah, that poses a bit more of a challenge than Philippines. But yeah, both are doable. We've been at it for a while now.
Mm, nice. And just taking one quick step back in terms of the measurement of you know, these pilot studies that you're doing and measuring the success, what are you trying to measure? Like, are you trying to measure comprehension? If so, how do you do that? Is it more about CSAT and things that you can, you know, not necessarily directly attribute to this technology specifically? However, if there's a pattern emerging, which is the calls that are using the technology typically have higher CSAT, then you can, you know, generalize. Like, how are you thinking about measuring the impact of it?
Yeah, so there's the internal measurements that we use, and I'll talk about that. And then the external ones I've already talked about. When they're running their pilots, they're measuring their normal preferred KPIs. So for sales, it's revenue. For support, it's handle time often and callbacks, CSAT. Now, the internal measurements we track are MOS score. These are scores, ways of rating voice quality. There are 1 to 5 ratings. We use Mechanical Turk and get a vote on new versions of the model. And we rate the models for naturalness. How human does it sound on the 1 to 5 scale? Accentedness. What's the level of accent? Acoustic quality. Are there like various like noises that make it less smooth and things like that. So we have like about 5 or 6 measures, and some matter more than others. I would say if I had to pick one, naturalness is most important, assuming you're reducing accent for sure, but naturalness, how human it sounds, is often like that split second judgment people have when hearing our solution is based on that. So it's something we work very hard on.
Mm. The first one was what? MOS score? M-O-S-S.
M-O-S, yeah.
M-O-S.
Yeah, so it's a commonly used approach in the voice space, voice AI space.
Right, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. And you use Mechanical Turk for grading and rating things like naturalness and stuff like that, do you? Or is that an algorithm that does that based on how it sounds?
We had to wrangle Mechanical Turk and do a lot of things to make it work for us. Out the box, it wasn't as useful. So over time, we built tooling around it to help us get consistent and reliable votes on these things.
Right. And this is just something that you use internally. This isn't necessarily stuff that you know, give to your clients. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's my next startup, maybe, but you're right. Yeah, right. Internal tools. You know, that's a good way to start new companies.
Yeah.
Externalized tooling you had to build.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, yeah. That sounds great. So, what's the feedback been then? These products that you're going through at the moment. What's generally speaking? Because obviously, in theory, technology working in a demo environment and making sound bites for the website and so like that's one thing. But putting it in production, thousands of calls running through it, like it can be a bit of a different beast, can't it? So, what's the feedback like so far from the pilots you've been running?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of excitement. This, especially for like we're starting with. Companies are doing outbound from various places, calling folks and often getting hangups, 50% or more hangups because of lack of trust. And so there's a huge opportunity to move the needle for these businesses and transform them. And those are the ones we start with first. We often test first with smaller BPOs and call centers, and then move up to the bigger ones after refining the solution.
Right. And what would it, how do you actually go about doing this then? Like, talk us through like the typical call center architecture, and how would a BPO, or even if you're not using a BPO, you've got a contact center, you know, internally onshore, how would someone go about implementing Tomato AI into that mix?
So it was a priority for us to be as seamless as possible when doing the integration. I've learned over the years how challenging and complex integrations can be and how much of a showstopper they can be. And with that, we've created integrations that work with whatever stack you have. So one way of integrating is to install a virtual mic on your PC. And then as you speak into the mic, it's picked up by the virtual mic, goes to like the local cloud, Google, Amazon, whichever one you prefer, Microsoft, is enhanced and then sent back to the PC and out to the VoIP provider. And so no integration is needed with the VoIP provider because it's just an operating system level enhancement. So that's one way. The other way that will be available later in the year is something called a SIP proxy configuration. So there's no client install, and you're just configuring something on the server side and then making it available across seats. It's a standard adopted by all the VoIP providers.
Right, so that would be then their audio is first sent to Tomato AI. You then send it back out through the VoIP provider that way.
Exactly, yeah. You don't make a trip back to the PC. So a little bit faster in that sense.
Yeah. And what's the latency like currently then in that configuration where you're doing it on the PC?
You know, we've done a lot of like testing and showing of the technology, and the feedback we got is currently we're at a sub-second overall latency, and that's good for a lot of these use cases, the outbound use cases. We're continuously working to reduce the latency. The biggest part of the latency is what's called the context window, and that's configurable by us. Context window means how much of the word are you waiting to hear to know how to change the accent on the word. Are they saying tomato or tamale? Until I get that last syllable, I don't know. And then once I do, I change it. And certain use cases need smaller context windows. And so we can get away with smaller ones and less latency. But overall, it's sub-second, which works for most folks.
That's pretty good, yeah. So am I right in thinking then, based on that last statement, that essentially in terms of what it's doing is it's taking the audio, it's transcribing the audio into text, and then you have a different model that then will push that back out as text-to-speech?
So actually, to be clear, we do speech-to-speech models. It never goes to text. The problem with going to text is you introduce transcription errors, you lose prosody, which is like the melody of the voice, and you increase latency significantly. So we just transform the speech and don't ever go to text.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. So, yeah, because I was just confused there when you said that, like, you want to see whether it's tomato or something else.
Oh,
like,
I see.
Yeah. So is that all done acoustically?
Yeah, done acoustically at the syllable level. And we don't hard code anything, obviously. It's AI models that learn from examples.
Right. Interesting. I've got to ask the question, it's even a, it's a feature on your website as well, which is
okay.
The ethical implications of this. On the one hand, you've got seemingly brilliant technology that can definitely bridge the gap between that offshore resources that do have thick accents and, you know, the American or the British or European or whatever markets that tend to use those resources most and make those conversations more productive. That seems like a win for the business. And if the voice is so good, then we're not necessarily going to impact the customer experience because they might not even know that they're talking to talking via a synthetic kind of voice. But it does raise the kind of ethical question in terms of, does the person know that there's been technology in there manipulating that person's voice? Like, I don't know what the ethical implications are or if they are any. I just saw it on your website. And so maybe you can share with us a little bit about, like, one, what are the ethical concerns that your clients might have and what kind of things do you do to kind of mitigate those things?
Yeah, this is really important piece, and thanks for bringing it up. In high school, I was the president of the International Club for 2 years and celebrated different cultures, and I love accents, and I think most people enjoy the diversity in the world. In the case of a call center scenario where someone's calling you, or let's say your internet's out and you're trying to get help to get back online, you're like desperate, there's benefits in making the voice easier to follow and trust. And so in that realm, we think that there's benefits to doing that. Generally, we love accents, and all of us on the team have different accents, actually, except for one person. All of us were born in different countries. I also will say that this has the opportunity to really transform many countries that have large poor populations. It can help lift people out of poverty. Capable people will now be able to get better jobs globally. All of a sudden, the world economy opens to them in a bigger way. And even people who have jobs can get better pay as their performance improves. And so there's a huge opportunity to improve global communication and improve the economic status of folks that all of a sudden become available for work.
Mm, yeah, definitely. And you could feasibly see a kind of world where, exactly that happens, where, you know, the BPOs that are in those locations can get more business because they can demonstrate, you know, they'll be looking for, we want to prove that with this technology we can get higher CSAT scores, and therefore they become more competitive and they can win more business, they can grow and expand. I can see where that happens. Yeah. Do you think that you know, part of the EU legislation stuff that's been kicking around lately, there's lots of things in there, but one of the things in there is about making it clear that you are talking to an AI kind of. And in your situation, you're not talking to an AI, it's a person at the other end of it. But there's something in there. Do you think that legislation like that, if and when it comes to America, would impact you? Or do you think that you're, because as a person at the end of it, you kind of won't need to do that?
Yeah, so, you know, AI legislation, it's early days and folks are trying to figure out what makes sense. You're right. Right now, in certain pockets, there's new laws that require you to self-identify if you're a virtual agent. As you said, here we're talking about human agents, and we're just using a voice filter to help with the communication. Our stance right now is let the company decide what makes sense for their use case. Whether to like let the listener know that it's on, or if it's natural enough and there's no issue perceived by the customer, you know, just have the conversation and have it go better. So, you know, we'll let the market decide. We don't dictate to our customers what they should do. Now, we do have controls around who uses our technology because we're B2B. We can carefully filter out companies are unethically looking to use our technology. So there is a level of filtering we do on who gets to use it.
Yeah. So that's fair enough. Yes. And I can see you've got a kind of a privacy policy there, which is like, here's the stuff you can't do with it. And obviously you're going to be in control of whether people do or don't do those things to some degree, because you can decide who gets to use it and not. In terms of I suppose this is related to an ethical question, I suppose, which is that on the accent side of things, I can get that completely, and on both sides of things, I can get it and understand it. It's just that the accents is less. Less. You're not necessarily. Are you still hearing me? I think we froze for a second.
Yeah, you were gone for 5 seconds. So if you could repeat the last 5 seconds.
So what I was saying is that with the voice clone inside of things, there is less kind of risk in quotations in terms of like falling foul of any ethical legislation or whatever that might come around, because you're still talking to the same person. When it comes to the voice filtering, changing the voice sound, so female can sound like a male can sound like a female, or that voice can sound like anyone else on the planet, arguably, that's, I think, maybe where there might be a little bit more pushback in certain areas from some members of the public, do you think, or not?
Yeah. You know, a lot of AI legislation is often done in reaction to abuse. And, you know, it's early days for voice filtering, and the companies involved largely have a strong incentive to do the right thing and roll it out in safe ways. And over time, we'll see where the legislation goes. But, you know, if there's like business value and it can be managed, you know, then this will thrive. And that's what we expect will happen. Like any AI technology, there'll be incentives to get ahead of the bad actors.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And from the kind of feedback you've been getting so far, the pilots that you've been running, and the kind of, you know, the clients that are using it, what are they using more? Are they gravitating more towards the kind of changing voices, or are they gravitating more towards the accent softening?
Our flagship solution keeps your voice and reduces your level of accent, which we think most individuals will want to like not completely change their identity, but still it's them, just so you can understand them better. Similar to maybe taking a class that helps you pronounce words better, but it happens like in an instance. And what we're finding is beyond call centers, we're getting a lot of interest for pilots from executive assistant kind of companies, let's say in the Philippines, where you're all day interacting with folks, and it makes it a little bit easier to soften the accents. And so it's related to call centers in the sense that they're on the phone all day.
Yeah. Interesting. And can the person who's on the phone hear what their voice is sounding like, or no, that's hidden?
No, it's just like any normal conversation like we're having here. You can only hear the other speaker.
Yeah.
But you don't, yeah, there's no like hearing yourself twice happening.
Yeah. You're not using it now, are you?
I am not. We're on the iPhone. It's a PC-based software, but maybe next time we record.
Yeah, wicked. That's great. So you mentioned it's speech to speech. That means that presumably are you actually cloning the voice, or are you in real time replicating the frequencies that passes through, or something else?
You know, we're sort of pushing the boundaries of what cloning means. Often when you hear cloning a voice, you think another person's voice. But we clone your own voice and regenerate it with less accent in real time is really what we're doing. All done in speech-to-speech kind of fashion.
Wow. So, yeah. And is there any onboarding required, or is it just literally you turn it on and start talking and it just does it?
Yeah, you just start talking. That's the beauty of it.
Wow.
We work very hard to make it low friction to get going. And also, if you think about call centers, they have so many agents and they come and go, like, you know, they churn often. And so if we required a lengthy onboard, it would really slow down adoption.
Yeah, it would, yeah. Imagine it being like one of those voice biometric systems where you've got to spend like 10 minutes getting yourself trained up on it and all that lot, and it only recognises if you say certain things. It'd be a nightmare.
Right.
So how much do you think about... So first of all, technically, that's very impressive. The fact that you can clone and reproduce a voice basically in real time is brilliant. Mm-hmm. How much thoughts and efforts do you place on that, which is, I would call it like the back end bit, which is getting the input, figuring out how we replicate this voice, figuring out what they're saying, and then now we know what to do, versus the output in terms of how the voice sounds. So if you think about, like, not that these are competitors because the use cases are totally different, but like ReSpeecher, for example, we've had Alex Serdiuk on the podcast from ReSpeecher, and their voices are brilliant. You know, they've been used in Disney programs and all sorts. And so in the contact center, I would say that it's less important to have a really, really like natural, normal kind of sounding voice, because people are used to talking to AI systems and things like that. So if there's a little bit of, if it doesn't sound entirely completely perfect, then that's fair enough. But so I'm just wondering, how much kind of efforts do you place on, first of all, we need to just understand this and make sure that we can understand what the accent is, tone down the accent and all that kind of stuff, versus we want to make the best possible sound in voices?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would say that as humans, we've gotten used on cell phones to more latency than live conversation. So, you know, it's acceptable to have like a sub-second latency from when someone speaks to when you hear it, to have a back and forth lively conversation. In person, the latency is like 25 milliseconds.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's hundreds of milliseconds on the cell phone. So it's just something we've been conditioned to since the cell phone era started, and now it's normalized and we're not even aware of it. The other thing we've gotten normalized to is that cell phones have pretty low kind of quality signal. It's 8 kilohertz, which doesn't include a lot of the richness that maybe studio quality recordings, the offline use cases, the Disney use cases have. So the richness is not as much there. And so just be aware that what we're working with are those limitations, because we have someone on a cell phone talking often to the agent, right?
Yeah.
That's probably the most common use case. So I just want to start with that. There's parallel work to make sure that the right words are generated, you know, the same words that were said originally. So one of our metrics is intelligibility and making it, you know, still true to the original words. So that's one aspect that we measure and optimize with every new model that comes out. And then in terms of quality of the output voice, that's going back to that naturalness measure I mentioned and acoustic quality. Those two together give you a full view of how quality is the output voice. But we can't get to studio quality again because of the hardware limitations we're facing here.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. I don't think anyone would ever expect it to be studio quality. I was just curious in terms of like internally with your team, what tends to get focused on most, like understanding and knowing what to do, as in like, this is this accent and therefore we know we can reproduce it and soften it, versus kind of like the end result, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we pick accents based on business opportunity. Where are there the most agents and which markets? So that's how we pick the source accent. And then the output accent similarly is also based on the business opportunity. Where is there the most largest market for that output voice? So that's how that gets set. And then the scientists go to work to make those accents work on both ends, the input and output.
Yeah. Nice one. That sounds good. That sounds great. I definitely want to, and we've got a little bit of time left. I definitely want to kind of touch on a little bit of some of your previous experience and your, you know, work at Google and stuff like that. So before we move on to that, where can people go and learn more about Tomato AI if they do want to?
Yeah, so you know, you can go to tomato.ai and fill out a form there to like get a demo of the solution. And also, we're going to be at a few conferences coming up, call center conferences. So the call-in contact center expo in Vegas next week, Tuesday through Thursday. And then in 2 months, the big one, contact center world, or call customer center world, I think is what it stands for, CCW. Definitely come by our booth there, and you know, we can go really into it as well in person.
Nice one. That sounds brilliant. That sounds great. Yeah, I genuinely think that, you know, this solution is ideal, especially for those BPOs where they've got kind of, that's what's one of the issues. I know that Virgin all the time, you know, I fly with Virgin regularly, but like whenever I fly, most places I go with Virgin if I can. And yeah. Anytime you want, even actually we have Virgin Media here, we have Virgin Internet and stuff like that, and Virgin outsources everything. And yeah, it's always, I don't know if it's the Philippines or India or wherever it is, but and like many contact centers, it's all the same, you know. Sometimes you mm-hmm. not all the time, but sometimes there's a person you're speaking with and you've got to really concentrate, you know. So I think solutions like this are brilliant because they just level the playing field for everyone, essentially, as long as it can be done kind of ethically and there's no kind of like, you know, like hoodwinking or whatever going on, which obviously there isn't, but like you can see that this tool getting into the wrong hands could be pretty powerful. But obviously, you know, you having a closed kind of approach and being ethical in how it's deployed is solving that. But I think the technology sounds great. And I think actually, and you've probably been giving this some thought as well, but there are lots of other areas where this can be used, you know. Yes, entertainment is one, but I'm sure you've got a list a mile long of other areas where it can be used.
Yeah, you're right. Like even, you know, for content creators, imagine, let's say an Indian content creator can create local versions of the podcast so they get more engagement. And so a version for, you know, let's say Scottish folks and the version for Filipino audiences and, you know, all that will be possible. So that's definitely another extension. And then meetings. Meetings is a big one. All of us are in meetings throughout the day where, you know, if there was this magic button, we would try it out, a voice filter one, just to see if we can get through the call more easily with less strain. There's been studies that found that recall rate goes down when you're straining to follow the conversation. So not just trust and intelligibility for sure are issues, but also recall. And so all that can be helped.
Do you think that something like this, my hypothesis is that OpenAI get good results with their speech recognition because they use their large language models as part of it. One of the things that we've kind of been trialing a little bit is with podcast transcripts, where we have people on the podcast with an accent. We transcribe them all, but obviously the word error rate still exists. And so, you know, there's issues there. So one of the things we've been thinking about is how can we give a large language model our podcast transcript and then tell it to clean it up based on what may be ASR
Makes
issues?
Sense.
And I reckon that, that OpenAI must be doing something like that, which is as the audio is coming through, it's transcribing it, and then it's having a language model work through it and say, well, is that a likely thing to come next? Probably not. Let's change that to what's more likely to come next. So, because part of the issue with most speech recognition systems is either the audio quality or the accents. So maybe even there's something in there. There's probably a bigger market for you to look at in those use cases you just explained. But there's also potentially some area there where you could be a pre-filter to an ASR system to take any accent, kind of, you know, filter it to soften it to turn it into American or whatever model of speech recognition performs well at, and then use that to do the transcription. So there's probably something there.
Yeah, you're right. Once we're getting this to work well and across accent and languages, there's opportunities like that as well. My co-founder and CTO led at Google speech-to-text and text-to-speech engineering. And back in the day, they tried this before this tech was mature enough, and it didn't work so well. But I think it's really a matter of how well does the accent softening work, and then you can start benefiting in those ways.
What about, because another area is translating, real-time translation. You know, that's an area I've seen Bosch have a go at it. It was a number of years ago, but it was very slow, far too slow to have on a call. Have you thought about that, how you might be able to use this sort of thing to do real-time translation?
Yeah, that's something that in the future we could go into because there's a lot of transferable skills and similarities with the use cases. The problem with translation is the context window currently needs to be pretty big, meaning multi-second, for you to know what the right thing is to do, how to properly translate a sentence to another language, because you're not doing it verbatim. You're not translating words verbatim. And that's where the challenge comes in, knowing what the context is, what is really being said, and how to say it in another language. And so for real-time use cases, that's tough, like to get it out in sufficient time. Now, we've seen text translation work pretty well because with text, you can go back and rewrite. So you see it write the initial guess, and then it rewrites it seconds later to improve the way it's translated. In text, we've seen it work well. In voice, it's still very challenging.
Yeah, and I suppose with translating into a different language, you also, you're dealing with different intonation, because how a German person speaks and how they emphasize words and the way that they pronounce words and how they kind of like, you know, yeah, how they would naturally just kind of pronounce
right.
things isn't necessarily the same as it would be in English or what another language, you know?
Yeah, there's prosody, which is like the melody of your voice, and that sounds different per language. And then there's pronunciation. So two separate things that you can play with to improve intelligibility and trust.
Yeah, yeah. Nice, nice. Well, I think we're just about up on time there. Maybe we can do do this again sometime to go through some of the other lessons, because I know that you've got such experience in terms of the actual conversational AI implementation and all that kind of stuff. But I think it makes sense to round it off there. I think that, as I said, you've got sounds like a brilliant technology there. That we've heard some of the clips. It sounds pretty good. I think it'd be interesting to see where it goes in terms of the next 12 months and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, yeah, what the impact is on some of those CSAT metrics and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, we'll do this again. But definitely, yeah, there's an open invitation there to come back and have another chat about some of the lessons learned in terms of deploying conversational AI for at scale. Definitely.
Ken, yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, would love to be back and go into those other AI solutions for call centers. Definitely a lot of like battles and like trenches I was in fighting to make wrangle these kind of solutions. So happy to share lessons learned.
Nice one, nice one. That'll be number two. Then one more and you get the VUX World Cap, the VUX World Hat-Trick.
Nice, okay,
there we go, yeah. Thank you again for joining me, that was brilliant. Let me have a look what's coming up next week. We do have something coming up next week, I'm pretty sure. I'm actually at the Forums Customer Experience event on Tuesday. We've got our meetup on Wednesday, AI Meetup North, which is the first one of our meetups we're doing. Oh, that's it. Monday, we've got Love Holidays on the podcast. And then Thursday, if we can swing it, we might have Vodafone on the podcast. So, yeah, some epic conversations coming up. Ofer, thank you so much for joining me. It's been absolutely brilliant. Thank you immensely. It's been such an interesting conversation, and I wish you all the best with Tomato AI.
For sure. Thanks so much, Kane.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you again on the next one. Thanks now. Bye.